Welcome to the Aftershock Central podcast with Travis and myself. You're asking to yourself, where is Ronnie? Ronnie is passed out in a kiddie pool full of Faygo. If you don't get that reference, look it up. So what's up, man?
Oh, dude, I'm just kicking it, man. It's been hot over here on the west side, but we're getting through it.
You're not in the middle of the fires, are you? That's farther south.
It's like all around, but it's nowhere close to LA.
Gotcha.
Like, I think there's one in like Orange County or something, but
gotcha.
That's a good ways away. There's been a lot closer fires, like within the last year or two, like knocking on the door of the city. So
yeah,
but yeah, you know, it's got to go through a lot of city to get to anywhere where I am. And there's like no trees around. So I'm in good shape.
That's so true. Oh man, it's funny when my wife first went to New York, we went up there to visit my dad. She's like, "Oh, there's actually trees here." I'm like, "Yes, there's trees in New York."
How you doing?
You know, I'm living the dream, bro. I hope I never wake up. Let's get on to the books. First up, first up, we have let's do Animosity Evolution number 7. This is written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Eric Gapster, colors by Rab, the Swaggy P. Schwager, and letters by Marshall Dillon.
Yeah, all so right. What do you think of it?
What did I think of it? This was an interesting issue. This was very different from the other ones. I love the Dolphin SEAL team. That was my favorite part of this issue. I'm a little confused about what's going on with what was it, the coyote or whatever? Is that what his name is?
I think it's the jaguar.
No, but he had a name.
Like one. Mm.
Yeah, I can't remember. Anyway, the mafia guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they live on a ship, and they have a floating casino, which that's cool. Now, is this the resistance that they've been hinting at? Is that this group?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, dude. Like, you know the humans that are in that group, among other things? Like, they were in the last issue. I mean, the dude was kind of, like, trying to lead an uprising. And he's the husband of, like, Lady Doctor, who does all the Animata, like, implants.
Yeah, yeah, because we do learn about that, right? We learned that he's the one that gave him the codes to destroy the Animata.
Yeah, so, like, they were doing that, but I think they're also, like, obviously, like, they were the one that killed the Animata, you know? They were kind of, like, abducting animals, and, like, so I think they're... I think they're both resistance, but they're also just straight up like organized crime.
Yeah, that first part of the issue, I think, was a little confusing for me because there was a lot of going back and forth, right? You've got the stuff with this gang / revolutionary people, and then you have the stuff going back in the main city with I always forget her name, Wintermute. So I think for me, it was a little confusing. It was a little jarring to read it, but I really enjoyed the issue. I thought it was well done. I think it introduces a new element in the book when they bring in the dolphins.
Yeah, I mean the dolphins. Yeah, definitely. It's always interesting when you incorporate a new faction, you know. And in this case, obviously, they made some kind of deal with, like, you know, the Jaguar and that organization they're blowing up the water supply to cause chaos. You know, so that they can, like, overthrow Wintermute.
Right.
Wintermute was in the process of trying to, like, get them on her side, but was just, you know, late on the ball.
Yeah, that was interesting stuff, though, right? Because they talk about how they had planned... Because remember, we had the attack last issue with the elephants, and that's referenced in this issue as well. And they reference how... Part of the plan was that they would have these animals attack, and between that and the Animata being destroyed, they would kind of see the people revolt, and that never happens because Wintermute is really skilled at leading her people.
I mean, dude, Wintermute is a fascinating character, dude. Like, it seems like she's kind of facing always like an impossible task, you know. And definitely is forced to extreme stuff. And I think it's only bound to get more extreme, like the things that she has to do as stuff gets more and more desperate.
Mm-hmm.
But always to justify for you know, the greater good, you know, trying to keep the most people alive, you know, people and animals.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's interesting when you stack it with, you know, like she's very much wrapped in kind of the vocabulary of, I think, you know, let's say socialist or communist, like leaders or revolutionaries, where you're kind of just like, all of us are going to be equal, versus, you know, the resistance that are like, basically we're bringing back the food chain, you know, like this is that, you know, this is the only way it's going to work, you know, like implicit inequality. So it's interesting to see those two things, face off, you know, in this context.
Yep. I agree. So we don't see the new big bad, right? The Ur-King. We don't see that character, but what do you think it is?
You don't think it's some kind of dolphin?
I don't think it's a dolphin at all. I think it's like a giant squid.
Okay. Wasn't there a thing right, like in the middle of the issue, or maybe right in the beginning, they had a gigantic crab?
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
like
you're right.
I remember seeing that and being like, "What the hell is that about?" So if that's the Ur-King, that's ridiculous, dude.
Yeah, you're right about that. I didn't even think about that. I guess that would make sense if that's a reference. I just automatically assumed a giant squid because when the issue ends, it's completely dark. And all you see are the little bubbles where, like, something's going to come up from here, I guess. So I assumed a giant squid just because I think visually a giant squid would be freaking awesome, especially a talking giant squid. But you're right. Based on that scene at the beginning, maybe it is a giant crab.
Yeah. I didn't think of that, you know, like, cause I just, it seems almost like how much could they really get involved, in kind of an inland struggle? You know, I'm not familiar necessarily with like how accessible San Francisco is to, you know, the sea, you know, via waterways, but seems like they would be limited to like the water. So really they're most effective going after the people that are on the ships.
Right. But the thing is that the city that Wintermute is protecting is right on the coast, and they're getting, I guess they don't have a way to use ocean water. So they're using fresh water, and that's why the dolphins destroy. I mean, I assumed it was a dam, but it looked like it was off the ocean, right? So it couldn't be a dam. Maybe it was the desalinization plants. Is that what it could be?
I mean, it could be a reservoir too.
Yeah, I guess,
know,
so.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That was interesting. How did you compare this book with the main Animosity title?
I've been more kind of, invested in this one, I would say. Because I like the scale, you know, like it's kind of like the reverse of, you know, the main title, wherein like you're kind of now looking at from the top down, you know, seeing how this is all playing out in an urban environment versus, you know, Animosity is like starting small and you're always like just following kind of a small group or person, you know? So yeah, like yeah. you only get a hint of what the environment is out there, you know?
Yeah. So what I find interesting is how much more, I mean, maybe that's what's called evolution, but how much more evolved society is on the West Coast in this book over the East Coast in the Animosity book, because it seems like in Animosity proper, they're mostly in rural areas. And so there's not like huge groups of people. You don't see animals and humans living together as much as you do here. Right. And it seems like they've already reestablished society in some ways in this book. Whereas in Animosity proper, they're still a long way from that.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe it might also speak to just how remarkable, like what if Wintermute is an outlier and like all the other cities completely ate themselves and devolved into like the type of townships that we saw in the main title, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, based on everything we've seen, it would make more sense for them to have devolved and you're right, for Wintermute to be an outlier. So yeah, I guess you're right. All right. Let's rate this one up. We've got a lot of books to get through today. What's your score, cool. Travis?
Let's go 4.25 out of 5.
Wow, okay. I'm going to go tough. I'm going to go I'll stick with a 4. I'll stick with a 4. I'm still digging this book. But like I said, I think this issue was a little weaker than some of the other ones for me, and it might just be the fact that I only read it once. So I usually reread the books before we talk about them. I only read it once, so maybe I missed a couple things. But yeah, I think overall it's still pretty solid. Which
dude,
book do you want
to
do next?
I have to say, though, just as a final thought to that, that the scene, like the dream sequence in the middle where Wintermute like turns into a lady robot.
Yeah.
That was weird, and I don't know what to make of it. I'm still a little confused by all of that.
All right, we'll spend a second talking about that. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting because we've explored a lot of aspects of what can happen between people and animals when animals gain consciousness. The one thing that has not been explored in any of these books is romantic relationships between animals and people, right? Like,
yes.
Because in the proper book, we have Sandor and Jesse that have that like father-daughter relationship, but it's not a romantic relationship. Whereas it seems like Wintermute may have some romantic feelings.
Yes. I mean, I think that there is some kind of like interspecies couple in the main title, unless I'm mistaken, you know, like a cat and a cow or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's not the same as the animal-human thing.
I mean, like, from the premise of the book, like, an animal, sure. You know, a human is an animal, you know?
Right, right.
I'm not advocating for it, but I'm just saying that, like, I don't know.
That's really interesting. I wonder if they're going to explore that a little bit further. Because, you know, Wintermute is definitely more, I don't know, more human in a way than the rest of them. Maybe because she's so cunning, and so she seems a little more human than the rest of them.
Yes.
And it might be the fact that she's in a position of power, so she has, I guess, maybe the time to pursue other things. Whereas most of the animals don't have that luxury, right? Like, they have to work all the time in order to accomplish her tasks, whereas she doesn't have to do that. So maybe she is able to explore different aspects of what it means to be conscious. I don't know. That was really interesting.
I think there are like some animal characters that are pretty human, like the mouse and Penny the cow. Like,
sure,
you know, they dress up in clothes and, you know, like have hobbies and stuff. Like, so they're human. Like, I think the thing about it, you know, being a romance, that's not something actually I really had thought much about between Wintermute and Adam. But I think she does say something about like, that's the only time they'll ever kiss. So maybe that just like points to that. I don't know. They might lean towards like a romance that's not physical and it's just like, you know, intellectual or something.
All right, let's go to the next book. I'll let you pick it.
You want to do Clan Killers?
Sure. Let's do Clan Killers number 2, written by Sean Lewis, with art by Antonio Fuso, colors by Stefano Simone, and letters by your main man, Dave Sharp.
Dave Sharp. gotta go with the Daves.
It is mandatory if you're a letterer that your name includes the letters D, A, V, and E.
I think that's right. No time to fact check.
That's right. People that don't read Valiant don't know what we're talking about.
They letter other stuff, dude.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, so Clan Killers. This is a really interesting issue. There's something about the way that Celtic mythology is being introduced into this book that makes me want to go and read Celtic mythology because I don't know a whole lot about it. This death character to me was really interesting.
Yeah.
What's his name? Doolahan. He was really interesting. I found it fascinating though that he can be defeated so easily. That's the one thing that didn't quite make sense to me, right? Because, I mean, all she does is, like, jump off a tree, her and Cillian jump off the tree, and they're like, hey, we're here to make your deal. And he's like, let me throw my head at you. And they're like, no, we grabbed your head. Now you're going to do what we want. And he's like, all right.
Yeah. Okay. To be fair, though, don't those guys, like, kick ass? Like, you know, didn't they in the last issue essentially, like, slay an entire clan?
Yeah, yeah, and that's referenced and here, then, right? Because they offered Emmett's head to the Banshees. Yeah. So yeah, they're obviously badass, which is weird, right? Because the girl can't be but like 12 or 13, and the boy has to be, I don't know, 10. He looks a little younger than she is. So to have these two kids be such prolific warriors is insane. But this world is a little insane, so I can deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've seen them really fight yet. Like, you know, like, so, you know, maybe we just, you know, hopefully we'll see that at some point, see how it's done. But, you know, we don't really know a lot of her backstory per se, so it seems possible that, you know, her father groomed her, you know, from a young age to be a warrior or something, you know, like, their general family backstory seems like pretty, you know, vague at this point.
Well, it does seem to me that she may have been the favorite of the three kids, so maybe she was raised to be a warrior, because the two sisters seems to me like they were more raised by their mother, because they were around before he was king, right? So before he was king and had his own clan, like, he was a very different person. And I know they haven't shown any flashbacks of that kind of thing, but based on what the Banshees say, it does seem like he was very much a father, and I would say maybe a good person, definitely better than he is now. But there's something about the deal that he made to help him become king that kind of corrupted his personality and made him such a D-bag.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the girls practice magic, right? The older sisters. She does not.
Yes. That we've seen, no.
Sure, that we've seen.
Yeah, so that kind of, that could play, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very possible.
Like, yeah, she was a baby when the mother died, so maybe that's why she actually, you know, got the attention from the father.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just curious, I feel like they were kind of mysterious in this issue about, like, what happened to the mother, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they're like, retelling that story. You know, like, the daughter's like, tell me the story again of, like, when our mother was killed. I don't know. Like I almost got the impression that the king killed the mother, maybe, or that Balor somehow killed the mother.
No, I don't think Balor did. I think the confusion is that part of the deal that he made with Balor to become king somehow included the wife being sacrificed.
Yeah, so he kills the wife?
Yeah, I think he definitely killed the wife. And I think that may explain why he's so angry all the time, right? Because even though he got what he wanted, he became king, he lost a woman that he loved, and that's part of the reason why he's such an a-hole to his kids, is because, like, I think he lives with that guilt of having killed her, and his only way of expressing that is by beating his kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, I think it's possible also that he might just be completely insane, and that might, like, affect things, you know?
Yeah, but...
Like, it seems like he's pretty flippant about killing anybody.
But you gotta wonder why, though, and I think the trigger was him killing his wife. I don't think he was this way at all before she died.
I think they made kind of an impression in the intro of the first issue that, you know, like Balor drove him mad, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, she was whispering in his ear or something, and it made him into, like, a murderous lunatic.
Yeah, but you gotta think, too, this is kind of like mixing in mythology with real-life aspects. So I'm reading that more of a, you know, it's like the devil made me do it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where, like, the devil's not actually making you do it. It's just something you say to make yourself feel better when you do bad shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, metaphorically, but, you know, my reading is that, you know, there is real magic stuff in the story, you know? So I think, yes, Balor is like a character in the story.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, do you know, like, kind of historical stuff that relates to this?
No, not this particular story, no.
It feels real. You know, like, it feels believable, but I haven't tried to research it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was a little confused, too. I thought at one point maybe he killed one of the kids, but that's not the case.
It looks like he just gave her a slice across the nose.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but they reference that they found somebody in the courtyard with, like, a blanket over her. And I was like, wait, did he just kill his kid? And then, but then you see both of them, so that's not the case.
Yeah, I was curious why they mentioned that she was wearing the tarp or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Mysterious.
I feel like... You know what I feel like about this book? I really like this book, so let me preface by saying that. But here's the but. I almost feel like I would enjoy this more if there was less of the king in the story.
Mm-hmm.
If it was more about this journey to find a way to defeat her dad and avenge her mother's death. And then that journey that she goes through meeting all these mythological creatures like the banshees, for example. I think I would like to see more of that and less of the king. Because the king is such an unlikable person. When he shows up, I'm like, ugh, this guy again. Like, can we go back to the cool stuff?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with, creating a villain. You know, like, if you left him off screen until the end, it might not have an impact.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but don't you think that there could have been... We had a lot of that set up in the first issue, right? So it felt like some of the... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know what? I'm wrong. I take all that back.
No. I mean, it could be, but I'm just wondering if they're going to build his story at all so that they do flesh out that like she's the favorite and he cares about her, or whatever,
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they build that into it. Meanwhile, she's just like trying to kill him.
Yeah, that's true. I do feel like, based on the stuff that we're seeing with these two characters, I feel like if at the end of this she defeats him, but he finds some kind of redemption, and I don't mean like actually redemption, right, or forgiveness, but like where he's got that aha moment where we as the reader realize why he's done all this stuff before he's killed, because I'm pretty sure he's going to die. Then I think I'll feel better about the whole thing because like we're really getting a lot about this guy and how awful he is, So for me as a reader, I'd like to see that change somehow at the end of the story. To have like the extra payoff.
Yes. Well, let me put this out there. I feel like there was an exchange at some point in this issue. Where somebody was talking to the girl and said, now you're the clan killer, you're a clan killer too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was one of the banshees, right? Because
yeah,
that's what he had to do to become king.
Yeah, right? So, yeah. Like, in a way, she's following in her father's footsteps. Yes. And, not unlikely to become the very thing that he is,
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just like the means to an end, but she could fall susceptible to stuff on the way that it seems like that's like maybe where they're going with it. It's like a generational thing, of like becoming your parents.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, time for ratings. I'm gonna give this one a 4 out of 5 too.
Cool.
I like this book a lot. I know Ronnie was a little kind of on the fence about it when we did the first one, but I really like this a lot.
Yeah, dude. I think it's like strikingly original,
Absolutely.
I've never read any comics that are even close to like this kind of mythology, so. I mean, it's totally novel in that sense. And I think they're doing a good job. I'll go 4.25 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. It can be hard to read too sometimes, right? With all the names, cause the names are not easy to pronounce.
Just as a final point, who one of the characters in Clan Killers was?
Who's that?
Reagan. Yeah. Don't you have a daughter named Reagan?
I do.
Yeah, so they put her in a comic book.
Oh, I thought you were trying to make a different connection. Oh, yeah, I gotcha.
Wow, all right. Sorry. I know I don't talk about your daughters often, but.
No. We're talking about mythologists. I was like, wait, am I missing something? What's the reference? Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. Yes. Yeah. Reagan. Reagan's middle name is Noel, by the way.
All right. Fun fact.
My wife likes Christmas.
Don't we all?
Yes. All right. On to the next book. Her Infernal Descent, number 4, written by Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson. We have art by Kyle Charles, colors by D. Cuniff, and letters by Ryan Ferrier. And this one was also, I think, a different issue from the previous ones in many ways. I think artistically, there was a lot more, how do I want to put this? I want to say maybe inventiveness in the page layouts. At least at the beginning of the book, right? I think once we get past the first couple of pages, it resets back to kind of what we've seen with the 5-panel layouts on each page. But before that, I really enjoyed the way the art was laid out in those, with the panels in the middle, and then like the wording on the side. For some reason, mm-hmm. that worked out really well for me. It gave you that eerie feeling that, you know, this character's kind of lost and trying to figure things out on her own, just like we as a reader are trying to figure that kind of stuff out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I think they've had their share of, innovative, like, stuff, you know, visually, you know. Like in the first issue where she's going down slash up the stairs.
Yeah,
like, you know, so there's been a lot of cool stuff. I thought it was interesting, like, that part in the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's in a, you know, empty landscape, seemingly, you know? And she's like, in despair because, like, being alone is her hell, I guess.
Right.
You know? And if not just being alone, like, being without her family. And yet it looks like heaven, you know? And, like, so I think that's what she's thinking, is, like, her heaven, her hell is heaven.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't be there.
Yeah. I find that really interesting, though, that these angels are sent here. I mean, we can assume that what the angels say is true, right?
Sure.
Sure or sure?
Yeah. I think you got to take that at face value, you know?
Okay. Because I wasn't sure. Like, it seemed a little weird that God would send angels to heaven to build, like, a resort.
Well, I thought that it was, like, they were expanding... like a colony in hell, like, because heaven was too crowded.
Yes.
Which is, like, a fascinating premise, you know, like, I'm curious where they're going with that, you know? Like, I think the more traditional idea is, like, hell's the crowded one, and heaven's, like, harder to get into.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was a little odd, I thought. Because I assumed the same thing you did, that hell would be the place that's full. Because, I mean, we've seen it in the previous 3 issues, right? Everywhere you go, it's just like crowds and crowds of people. And yet here we have this one space where there's nothing until she finds the building that they're building. And I love the fact that they're all wearing hard hats instead of halos.
Yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think that whole thing is interesting, you know? And, you know, I'm not sure how much to read into that they call it New Babel, right, and what the implications of that are if it's being built by heaven.
Well, that's the reason why I asked if we can assume that what they're saying is true, right? Because God destroyed Babel and, you know, separated people by languages because they built Babel. So why would God want Babel built again?
Yeah, so you're saying it's a trap or something?
Yeah, a trap, or maybe, I mean, I don't know, like, how much of the mythology they're including here. I think we've seen quite a bit of it. But, you know, I wonder if maybe these aren't fallen angels and not actual angels.
Ah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Because, you know, you always see, whenever you see depictions of angels, they're like these heavenly beings, you know, like, bright and shining with the wings and whatever. And then you see demons, and they're like red or black and hairy and have hooves and whatever else, right? Like, ultimately you forget that based on the story, originally there were angels. And so why would they no longer look like angels? You see what I mean? So maybe these are the devil's angels, the fallen angels, kind of rebuilding or expanding into another circle of hell because the other circles are full. See, that would make more sense to me.
Yeah, that is interesting. I'm going to guess that they probably won't really dig into that at all because, like, isn't it concluding next issue?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was just a little, like, teaser, and the rest is going to be, you know, like, her finding the family and whatever mm-hmm. is the conclusion. But I did think it was interesting talking about heaven and hell that, you know, they kind of seem to be hinting at the end at some kind of revelation that the lady had. And she's like, I get it. You know, basically it speaks to like a non-binary like kind of nature. And I'm almost wondering if they're trying to suggest that like heaven and hell are the same thing or, you know, something along those lines.
I would actually, I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Because they're definitely playing with the mythology of hell, so it would make sense for them to take that liberty.
Yeah. Let me ask you, you know, you are a big fan of the Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of inform stuff that you're seeing in this story?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think if you've read Inferno, you get a lot more out of this book than if you have not. And I think I just had a little back and forth with Lonnie because I really enjoy this book, right? I always read this book several times because there's always little hidden meanings in everything. And that's one thing I like about this book, right? Because while I love reading comics just to have a good time and enjoy myself while I'm reading them, I like the books that give me a little extra. And those tend to be the standout books for me. And I think since the first issue, this book has been packed with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, yeah, some people may not really understand the book because they just take it as a comic book and just want to enjoy that story. But there's so many hidden subtexts in this book that I feel like if you haven't read it or you're not familiar with the story, then you're going to miss a lot.
Yeah. And you could also miss a lot just if you're not familiar with, you know, some of the, you know, dead celebrities that populate the book.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, like my boy Hunter Thompson.
Yeah.
yeah, like, I was pretty happy to see him in here. Although I don't know if I necessarily see him as, like a purely violent person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I would think almost more, like, gluttony with respect to, like, substances and stuff, but...
Well, it wasn't about violence. It was about...
It's like violence to yourself.
Yeah, it was the suicide circle.
Suicide, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, suicide is one of the greatest sins you can commit in Christianity, right? Yeah. So that's why people that committed suicide have their own circle of hell here.
All right. So was the other guy suicide too?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. To go with your point, I mean, it can be difficult to figure out who the characters are. Just by looking at them, right? Unless you don't know who they are. But they do a good job at having those characters speak in quotes that they themselves said at one point.
Yeah.
And then you have the little note at the bottom of the page, right? Like, such and such from this particular work. And so that way you can follow who it is, that's talking, who the character is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, J.G. Ballard did, I don't know if you ever saw the movie, Empire of the Sun?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. That's J.G. Ballard.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you one more thing. You know, what do you think, the lady did, you know, that's like, that she's tortured so much about, you know?
I'm still convinced that she's responsible for the car crash that killed her family. I don't know if she was the one driving because it seems like she may be an alcoholic. And I think we talked about that last issue, maybe. So I don't know if that's the case or if she was just so abusive that her husband left with the kids and in the rush of trying to leave, like the accident happened or what it is. But she's somehow responsible for the deaths. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's stuff in this issue as well about like her being traumatized by car crashes and not being in a car since a unspecified incident and like, you know, knowing that her car was destroyed. So I think I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And I mean, and the van shows up here, right? The van is in the suicide circle except it's not destroyed. She's like, my van's here? So she may have blocked off some of the memory, right, of what it is that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which is normal, right? Like, if you're in a tragic situation like that, your mind tries to cope with the despair, and so a lot of times part of the coping mechanism is losing the memory of a certain event.
Yeah, I mean, I think she seems pretty conscious of it, you know? Like, I think she just hasn't talked about it explicitly.
Well, maybe, but even if she knows what took place, the fact that she denies it to everybody kind of goes with that point too, right? Because whenever anybody asks, like, she doesn't ever mention how she thinks that they got here, right? Or why it is that she's so adamant in finding them. I mean, there's obviously guilt that she's living through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I did find it interesting that the radio station that is in the van is 77.7, because number one, that's not a radio station. I think the lowest you can go is 87.7. That's number one. And number two is, you know, seven is kind of one of those magical heavenly numbers. So, you know, it would almost imply a heavenly connection, not a hell connection. But I find that interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, it's the voices of the kid coming through. So maybe they are in heaven.
Could be. What if the whole time she has been dead? What if she died in the first issue going up to the attic?
That's pretty crazy theory.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but everybody references her being alive, you know, so I don't know. It's possible.
Maybe. Did you see any meaning to the license plate number? G3RYON?
I don't think I thought about it.
Okay. I hadn't thought about it either. I was just curious.
Food for thought.
Food for thought. All right, let's rate this one up.
All right. I'll go 4 out of 5. I like it, and I'm curious how it's going to wrap up.
I'm gonna up you and go 4.5 out of 5 because I really love this book. So there you go. All right, let's move to the next one. Relay number 2, another Zach Thompson book with art by Andy Clark. We've got colors by Jose Villarubia and letters by Charles Pritchett.
Dude, this series is so awesome.
Yeah, this issue is really deep too. In particular, so they find Donaldson's homeworld. They find Donaldson, who says he's not Donaldson. He's one of Donaldson's descendants, until he's confronted and he's like, all right, I'm Donaldson. But there's a lot of like existential discussion in this issue, right? About like what it means to have free will and think on your own, what it means to be part of a monoculture. What's important in life, right? Like, is it important to be part of a culture, or is it important to do what you love, and how much are you willing to give up to do that kind of thing? I found that really interesting, the way that that those existential topics are kind of brought into this futuristic sci-fi story.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, pretty obvious at this point that, like, the relay is evil, you know? You know, like specifically because it, you know, by necessity has to wipe out any, you know, alternative viewpoints, you know, Donaldson, by contrast, just like, you know what, I'm not trying to do anything except exist, you know, and that's like, that's kind of what his plan is all about. And I like his kind of assertion, not only like specifically that all periods of history matter, you know? And I think that speaks to, like, the idea of the monoculture existing through time and, you know, wiping out history, wiping out anything of, you know, like, I don't know, substance, variety that's not itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. What do you think happened to Donaldson that make him change what he was doing? Because, I mean, originally, like we saw in the Zero issue, he's the one going around spreading the relay system, right? And I think we get some hints about the origins of the relay system in this issue, but not a whole lot. But he's definitely part of the original group that was spreading this technology. But something must have happened that he changed so drastically.
I mean, I will agree that it's so drastically different that I was very confused, you know? And, you know, like, so drastically different even that I wonder if even the premise of, like, what we understand to be his role is, like, something that was fabricated by the Relay, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, it seems like his existence and philosophy, you know, in theory, is a threat to what they are. So, like, maybe by creating a messiah or something and devoting resources to finding him was just, like, a way to wipe out your biggest threat, you know?
Well, it's part of the monoculture, right? Because they I don't think they ever intended to find Donaldson, right? Because it's been hundreds of years since they've had the system. And the fact that he's alive, I hope, gets explained, right? Because I think it's been stated that he's human, right? So it's not like he's an alien or anything like that. He's human. So how has he lived for 400 years? So I think maybe once Donaldson disappeared from history, the Relay system was just like, okay, we'll just create this messiah to keep people calm, and we'll say, hey, we'll go find Donaldson, but we'll never find him because he's dead, right? He's a human. It's like in The Matrix, right? I don't know if you've watched the whole trilogy, but you know how, spoiler alert for a 20-year-old movie, you know how at the end of the third movie, the architect's like, yeah, like, I created the one to give people some kind of hope, but always knowing that the one just has to ultimately come back into the Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Yeah, it definitely is possible, you know, are you asserting that maybe Donaldson is somehow fabricated or is a fictional character, was made by the Relay?
I mean, maybe. I mean, how else are you going to explain this guy being around for hundreds of years?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they won't.
Yeah, maybe they won't. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, also, at this point, are they going to tell people that they found him and, you know, like, blew up his planet? The thing that, like, was their number one goal, you know?
No, not at all. I don't think they're going to tell anybody. They're going to destroy the planet to keep it hidden and then just keep giving people that hope that one day they'll find Donaldson.
Yeah, I mean, so I wonder if that will kind of change Jad, like his character, you know? Like now he is faced with something that he knows is, like, not true about the Relay or something, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, he kind of already knows that, though, I think.
I think he's my read in the first issue was he was pretty, like, on the side of, you know, the powers that be and authority. I thought he was a believer more so than, like, the girl and the other guy.
Well, but that's the interesting thing too, though, right? Because even though he seems more like a believer, he's the one trying to dig up the truth. Whereas the people that actually don't believe in this whole thing are the ones keeping the order.
Yes, I did find that, like, an interesting twist.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he does realize the kind of, you know, inherent, like, dead end of, you know, a system that just relies on finding one thing. You know, I don't know. Like, they're talking about, like, Donaldson's talking about, like, you're going to be stifled because you're all about order and chaos leads to progress.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I find that interesting, though. It's almost like, you know, you have your status quo, and, you know, if they reveal the whole thing with Donaldson, then they're not going to be part of this cop force, right? Like, that's what they find meaning in. And by not having that, their life would have no meaning. Even though if ultimately by making all this known, it would, quote unquote, make things better. Like, what does make things better mean, right? Because their whole existence would change. Everything they've always known would change. And so maybe even if they don't believe in the system, they need to have the system in order to feel like they actually mean something in this world.
Yeah. I mean, but if, I don't know, if you kind of were faced with the idea that the thing that you, that is your system is a lie, you know, I could see that they would, you know, not want that to, you know, go unknown.
Well, I mean, we kind of see that now, right? In, like, politics, when there's something that you believe in is proven to be wrong, a lot of times people don't back off on believing it. They double down on believing it, right? Mm-hmm. They make it as if it were true, because it's hard to realize that the stuff that you believe in isn't true for most people. And so you find a way to justify that reality. And maybe that's kind of what all these people are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, people want the status quo.
Yep. One thing I found really interesting is when they're having the little chat after Jab and Donaldson talk in the house and they're back outside, the redheaded guy picks up a rake and breaks it in half.
Yeah.
What'd you think about that? Because it's almost like it's living material inside it.
That's what it looks like, yeah. I don't know. So, that's some weird, like, creepy monster movie shit.
Well, that almost goes to the thing about, like, maybe the relay created Donaldson, right? Maybe that's why he can live so long, is because he's not an actual person. It's like a biological, like, cyborg type thing. Like in Battlestar Galactica, right? In the new one,
mm-hmm.
when they have the Cylons that look like people, and they're made of flesh, but they're robots.
Yeah, I mean, so maybe somebody made, like, a fake Donaldson and Planet, you know, like, so that it could be found and destroyed, you know?
Yeah, there you go. I like this. See, now we're getting somewhere with crazy theory time.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, there's so much going on, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it's jam-packed.
Well, so that leads me to ask the question, do you think that the relay system created this entire planet in order to be found?
Yeah, the relay system or some forces that are trying to subvert the relay system.
Oh, okay, interesting. I hadn't thought of that. All right. Well, I mean, it looks like at the end they blow the planet.
Yeah.
And everyone cheers. So we can assume that Donaldson is dead, if that was Donaldson.
For sure.
All right. Do you want to rate this one up?
For sure, dude. I'll go 5 out of 5.
You know what? I think I'm right there with you, buddy. It's 5 out of 5 for me as well.
Yeah, and Andy Clark does the art, right?
Yeah, yeah, fantastic art.
He's awesome, dude.
He's amazing. He's been around a long time, so yeah. All right, the last book that we have to discuss today, Hot Lunch Special number 1, written by Elliot Rahal with art by Jorge Fornes. And let me tell you something. So when they announced this book, I was like, this is the dumbest name ever for a comic.
Yes.
But having read this comic, I think this book is brilliant.
Yeah, dude. I mean, do you watch the Fargo TV show?
Yes, it's exactly like Fargo.
Yeah, like, it's so interesting. And also, you know, in some ways, you know, I get the sense that this is, like, a very personal thing for Elliot. Like, yep. Being from, you know, Minnesota, you know, I think that Rahal may be a Lebanese name.
It might be. I don't know.
So I like that, I think, is interesting as well.
Yep.
And hopefully, yeah, like that gets explored as part of the tapestry of the story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I guess to briefly recap, we've got this Lebanese family that somehow got involved with the mob and ended up making lunch meat company. They sold sandwiches and vending machines. And we see some flashbacks. I mean, we can assume, what, like 20 years ago, 30 years ago, to the grandfather of the family who started the company, and he made this deal with a guy that owned a cattle ranch, and he would use that meat. And ultimately, that comes back to the present, because now we have the family continuing their business. The, I guess, grandson of that guy, or maybe the son of that guy, the cattle rancher, he feels like this family owes him something, because part of the original deal was that, you know, they would provide meat for Minnesota, and now they're expanding nationwide and he wants more money.
Yeah. So I think, it's actually like a trucking company that is like basically the mafia, and, like made a loan to, the family, partially on the terms that they would get exclusive rights in Minnesota.
Yeah, there you go.
And then they're like just now expanding into like 2-3 other states.
They mentioned like the Dakotas, the conversation, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yep.
So like that's why he's talking to like cattle ranch guy, and he's like, I need to double my order, and like, and you know, gives him some money, you know. And I have to wonder if you know, like there was like a offer he couldn't refuse coming afterwards. Just like, I'm curious if like the new distributor that's, you know, like causing all this stuff to happen, mm-hmm. if they might not also be like mafia affiliated.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
For sure.
So like, so they're going to like bring muscle to bear on, like the, whatever, Mornhan or whatever, like mm-hmm. Big Jim for pulling this, thing at the diner.
Yeah. Yep. And then in the, so in the background, you have one of the trucks getting stolen with a shipment. And we very quickly find out who did it because he admits to doing it.
Yeah.
And you have, the cops getting involved because as a result of this whole thing, this feud between the two families, somebody gets killed. And so there's a finger found in one of the sandwiches that a cop is eating in North Dakota. And somehow that gets back to this family because it was in one of their sandwiches.
Why, I don't know if it was somebody that was killed. I thought it was the trucker who they were talking to, like the one who's like truck flipped and they stole his ID.
Yeah.
Like he was missing a finger in that scene. So I think they matched it up with the one they found in the sandwich. I gotta wonder how that got in a you know, packaged sandwich if that's where it's going, you know.
Well, you could probably assume that it was planted there, right?
Yeah, like by Big Jim's people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, but I, you know, like, I wonder if that's like to get a message back to like the Coreys, like somehow. They're like, yo, like, I don't know. Funny story, the guy whose truck, you know, was driving your stuff, his finger showed up in one of your sandwiches, so. Yeah. What do you think, what do you have to say about that?
Yep. Yeah. There's some nice humor in here too. I like the gyro gyro joke. That was one of my favorites in here. Cause they're at the restaurant and the kid shows up and he's like, yeah, I'll have a gyro. And she's like, it's not a gyro, it's a gyro. And he's like, what? She's like, ah, never mind. I'll get your gyro.
I mean, it's a little harder to read it in print, but
yeah. I know. The only reason I know that is because I'm in the South. So if I'll go someplace, I always hear it like, hey, can I get the gyro? And they're just like, yeah, okay, we'll get your gyro. But
well, they say gyro in Seinfeld, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's not gyro.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So I thought the whole thing was pretty funny. And the cool thing about this book is that it's so cinematic too in the way that it plays out. In particular, the scenes at the police precinct when that one cop is doing the research on this company to find who the finger belongs to. And then at the end, right, that last page when the kid is sweeping up the restaurant and then you see the lights coming up in the distance and the car pulling up and then you have the restaurant getting shot at. I love those couple of pages.
Do you think the kid is smoking a J or like smoking a cigarette?
That's a good question. I mean,
I didn't see a filter, but
it definitely looks like a J.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
I agree, dude. Like, you know, the art is really great, you know? You know, I like how it's, you know, all represented, and this is an artist that I've seen in a couple things and he really impresses me.
Yeah,
so I'm definitely excited for more.
Nice. Yep, agreed.
Yeah, I had a thought reading early in the issue.
Mm-hmm.
When they're talking about I don't know, I was interested when they're talking about the grandfather, you know, kind of the story of him getting killed in a casino fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that was it. Like, was that your reading when they torched the fire? You know, when they torched the casino, he went down with it. So that's why he was no longer like an obstacle to, you know, Corey, the great grandfather, like getting together with his daughter.
Yeah. I got all that. So, I mean, that's kind of how this whole sandwich story starts, right? Because if it hadn't been for the fact that the great grandfather was a mob boss, then I don't think, what was the son's name? Jordan? I don't think he would have ran the business the way he ran it, right? Like for example, when he pays off the guy, like I don't think he would have done that if he wasn't involved in this whole mob thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And so the fact that he married this woman eventually led to this deal being worked out.
Well, like, he was already in the mob, like, kind of before the old man got killed.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he was, like, learning the life. But I'm just curious if he might have been involved somehow and been like, why don't we just get rid of this guy, you know? Like, yeah. he got the Italian mafia to torch the casino and, you know, paid them off somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
Yep, no, fair enough, fair enough. Let's rate this one up, dude.
All right, I'll go 4.5 out of 5.
I am going a 5 out of 5. I really like this book. In fact, I was tweeting earlier, this may be my favorite book of the week.
Yeah, dude.
So
yeah,
we'll see.
I just, like, I love Fargo, so...
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just the vibe that I get from this story, and it feels authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty strong.
Agreed. All right, next week we have some books. In fact, I don't know if you knew this, but next week we have a new book.
Ooh.
Coming to you next week, we have Baby Teeth number 12, Lost City Explorers number 3, and Volition number 1.
Nice.
Yeah. Dude, that art in Volition looks pretty sick.
Yeah, it's kind of like 3D-ish.
Yeah, a little bit. It looks really, really good. All right, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so on Twitter. Let Ronnie know that you missed him and that you will buy him a 2-liter bottle of Faygo. At Rumbar316, Travis is at The Great Magnet, and I'm a Geekbind. The show is at Aftershock Pod. That'll be it for us, and we'll see you next week.
Shock the world.